We're now going to hear some introductory remarks by my fellow co-chair, Leon Sanchez.
Thank you very much, Thomas. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Cross-Committee Working Group on Accountability session in Frankfurt. I'd like to remind all here and the ones that are joining us remotely that all speakers are assumed to be speaking on behalf of their appointed organization unless otherwise noticed. I would like to make a call to focus all of our participations on substance. The goals we have for this work meeting, which should be quite intense, are to finalize the agreement on scope of the group and definition, such as the purpose of accountability, for example. We would have to agree on workstream 1 versus workstream 2 classification criteria plus priorities, and this should enable to provide clarity about expected outcome of workstream 1. And hopefully we should be establishing the beginning of the work for the working group on workstream 1 once we have finished this document. And we would also like to have it conclude inventory of the working areas. And, well, of course, we are all adults and we're expected to behave. So I would make a call to respect the ICANN expected standards of behavior, which I believe that Grace has already put in our screen. And, well, there's an audio bridge for those who are not able to join either the Adobe Connect or are not able to be here with us. We would also like to remind all participants to state their name before they speak. So there's a record on the recording, of course, and on the transcript. Sometimes we forget to do that, so it's very useful. We would like to remind that we would like to be as inclusive as possible. So we encourage participation of all participants and members. And we would like also to make a call on trying to give space for everyone to speak. And by this, I would call for having, as I said in the beginning, substantive and non-repetitive participations. That will be also very helpful. There will be some ICANN staff doing some video footage in order to document what we're doing. Of course, anyone is able to opt out of being filmed or otherwise recorded. Just let staff know. And of course, there will also be some call for volunteers to document this further and have actual footage of them speaking to the camera. With regards to social media, we would like to call you to, of course, we encourage the use of social media, but we would like to call for responsible use of social media. One thing that has happened before is that when someone tweets or posts something in Facebook, it is assumed that it's a conclusion from the group, and we wouldn't like to make it look that way. So please use social media, but just responsibly. I would like to now introduce Theresa Swinehart, which is with us, and she's going to give a couple of words for us in order to energize this group and have a very fruitful discussion. Welcome, Theresa. Good morning.
Thank you, everybody. I think for many who know, energizing this hour in the morning may not quite be what we'll do. But anyway, from that standpoint, I just wanted to say a couple things. First of all, just an observation. This has really been an incredible amount of work coming into this day here. And thank you. I know it's an important part of the transition, looking at the changing historical relationship and the impact on accountability and what can be strengthened and what can be changed. And we have a lot of mechanisms in place, what can be built upon all of that. But in this context, I also just wanted to observe the dedication and work is really remarkable. I mean, over the holidays, emails continued and phone calls continued, and I know many didn't really get much of a break. And so this is really a remarkable initiative and effort overall. In the entire, on the list, there's 170 people who are sitting on the list, obviously the 25 members, but I think it's a demonstration that this is really a very visible process to the global community and an opportunity to show how we're engaging with the respective communities and coming to build consensus on an important area during this time. So I think this historical opportunity, these 2 days here, will allow us to engage in multiple different ways. I think, as you may be aware, we even have several members of our board in addition to Bruce Tonkin, the board liaison here, and it's a great opportunity to have additional conversations and side dialogues about all sorts of things. I just wanted to conclude that obviously we are supporting the process, more than happy to continue to support that. We remain committed to doing that in any way that the community feels is best to help it move forward on this. So with that, I wish the co-chairs all the best, and obviously this group here and everybody who is online. And welcome to Frankfurt, and thank you again.
Thank you very much, Theresa. One last remark here. In order to be able to include as many participants as possible, we don't want to use a timer, but we have one ready. So be aware. So, Thomas?
Thank you very much, Leon. And thanks, Theresa, again. I think this is an excellent opportunity for us to really make progress with the work that we're active on for the last couple of months and will be for the coming months. A fun remark regarding speaking. You do know that we have an audio, an Adobe Connect room for these meetings. So even those inside this room are invited to use the raising and lowering hands function. So that will make it easier for us to manage the queue and also treat both people on the audio bridge as well as those in the room equally. Actually, although we started a little bit later, we are a little bit ahead of our agenda, which is good. I think we will need that time as we move on. The next agenda item that we're going to deal with is the update on the CWG. As you know, the work of our two groups is highly interdependent and interlinked, and you do know that we are having regular coordination calls with the co-chairs of the CWG. And with our high-level statements, as you will recall, we've invited the CWG to potentially build on the results of our work. And the CWG had an intense work weekend, and they promised to get back to us with further communication, which has been worked on very hard over the last couple of days. And last night we've received a version that is still a work in progress, I understand. But I think it's good for us to understand where the CWG currently stands and where that would fit in with what we're doing. So we're going to hear an update from Avri on the status of the work of the CWG. And I think we can briefly discuss that. I think we should maybe also talk about the timelines and the process envisaged by the board. So Bruce, who's here, has kindly offered to provide some information on that as well. And then we should bear that in mind as we move on with our work. I think we can't really resolve the requests of the CWG in this 50-minute slot, but I think we should try to understand their ask and maybe discuss that a little bit, but I think that going into deep substance of that will likely not be possible. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Avri for a quick update. Avri, would you like to come to... It might make things easier for everybody to follow.
Good morning, everybody. It's lovely to say good morning, since usually you have to keep it time sensitive. Okay, in terms of the CWG, it continues to work. It continues to work in a model where it's trying to figure out the model that it's picking. So having processed the comments, having gone through a full weekend of discussing the comments, and of course acknowledging that there are many people in this room that went through that last weekend, even more than I did because they were there face-to-face and they were meeting twice as much as those of us on the phone. We've gotten to the point where I believe that that group is understanding the comments and is starting to walk through them. In terms of some of the components like the customer standing committee, I think it is starting to gel. There's starting to be a feeling that finding the consensus point is not impossible. In terms of the multi-stakeholder, the MRT, I'm losing the letters this morning, but the multi-stakeholder review team, thank you, is I think there's still more question. There's more question as to its scope, as to indeed how it works and that. So when you get to the contract co versus the alternate models, it's a very open field at the moment, and that discussion is going on. There's a new group that just started, Group 3B, looking at the various alternates. I wouldn't say that there's a candidate for alternate yet because there were several alternates in the comments, and that group is just starting the process of working through those and trying to find if there is indeed a alternate solution that meets. In terms of the independent appeals panel, the IAP, I think there's uncertainty, and it's one of the things that shows up in that set of dependencies that I sent last night, in that I don't think we've even gotten to the point yet of knowing whether that's something that's part of the transition process or whether that's part of the ICANN process. And that actually opened an interesting question in the last discussion, and I think that's one of the few things that hasn't been reported on yet, of looking at whether the things like the IAP and the MRT and whatever are actually attached to the contract, and that the IANA functions operator, which the new acronym has sprung up, in case you missed it, the IFO, in terms of whether those are attached to the IFO or are attached to whoever is, to ICANN or whatever. So where those things are attached is still an issue, and how that independence, how that arm's reach appeals mechanism would happen is still a question that I don't think we've explored very much. I sent last night a snapshot of a document we've been building on the dependencies. I'm functioning with Chuck as one of the editors on that. Alan did the first version of it, and then we started to build on what he and Jonathan had built. And that's a document. So I took a snapshot of that last night. What I sent you was a snapshot. After I took the snapshot, there were further edits. So I also then sent you all the URL of that document to be able to go. And I don't know whether this is the time to get into those dependency issues or not, because this was just the brief intro. So perhaps that's at a later time. But that document is there, and that document is a living document that changes, and as we work on it, as we start having a better understanding of what the dependencies are, it will evolve. I guess that would be about it for now.
Can we maybe go and portray the individual items in the document very briefly?
As I said, that's why I was asking whether you wanted to do that now.
I think that would be helpful.
Okay. So that document has five, or in the latest edition, there's been six. The way we're working on that document is people put in suggested changes, and then with the chairs, with others, we decide which ones get accepted and which ones don't. anything that's grammatical, I tend to accept immediately. Anything that fixes one of my many typos, I tend to accept immediately. Okay, so the first one we have, and these are not in order of importance. These are in order of them being written. The first one was budget accountability and transparency. The "and transparency" was added since my last edit. And one of the problems that we encountered is that we don't even know what IANA costs. We don't even know how much of those costs are for serving the other operational communities. We can break out sort of the full-time equivalents of the staff and certainly figure that out. But there's no, as far as we've been able to tell yet, understanding of what the full package, including overheads and other, are. So certainly even for making the decision, there's a certain amount of accountability there. But we also think that that's probably something that would need to continue long term. A lot of the issues that come out on this dependency, you'll see, have a stronger and weaker aspect depending upon whether it's an internal solution or an external solution and how external the solution is. Obviously, in an extremely external solution, understanding the ICANN budget becomes less important. In an internal solution, it becomes critical. So, but certainly for getting to the transition point, any solution, it's a critical. So it's an accountability issue we've got right now and maybe ongoing. One of the issues that's been brought up is accountability for redelegations. And while the decisions are made at ICANN and the discussion for GTLDs certainly are made at ICANN, for CCTLDs it's more, you know, are they made externally? Are they approved by ICANN? Who vets them? And how do you sort of appeal something like that? Where do you go if there's an issue? Have been sort of one of the questions and one of the accountabilities is so it's not necessarily directly related to making the decision to make the policy, but in terms of those, how are they implemented? Have they been implemented as they were supposed to be? And if somebody does want to complain about one of those, especially a CC, but the others, how would they do that? What are the mechanisms for that? Is it appeals mechanism? Is it the same appeals mechanism? Is it something else? Are there different solutions? There's assumption. Are there different solutions for CC than for Gs? How is that all structured? So that's been one of the questions. But we do think that there's an accountability component to that, though putting our fingers exactly on what is the accountability part versus what is the mechanism part is still open. There's the independent review of board actions, and I've already mentioned that one somewhat. And, you know, the whole question of a binding appeals notion and such is one of the things that I think is largely accepted, but no real details. And one of the things that comes out sometimes in the CWG is we're a solutions group, but sometimes we start thinking of accountability solutions, but that's not really our job. And so keeping those things sort of separated, that we have to find solutions. Some of them are IANA accountability, and then those we are responsible for in CWG. Some of them are wider accountability, those this group is responsible for, and the degree of internality and externality of the solution is sort of a moves the line, perhaps, of who is responsible for those measures and how they're done. So that's the independent appeals panel is slightly different because it's a wider range of appeals and how that, and all these things are interrelated. So that there's now this. There's then control over board decisions. This is not the appeal and the change, but this is actually mandating and sending board decisions. And so that's something that is that possible, again, more necessary in an internal solution than in an external solution. So that's been one of the, you know, and it says it's most restricted form. This might be restricted to decisions related to IANA, but in reality, it may not be practical to find this scope limitation. So again, the scope of all of these things is variable, and that's kind of where we get to the accountability and, again, the degree of internal, external. And one of the loops we have on all this is, you know, the solution needs to be picked on whether it's very internal or very external or somewhere in between and how we find that point. And we're just getting to what I call the end game in all of this is we know the pieces, we know many of the issues, how do we find our consensus points? And finding those tells this group what some of the accountability issues are. But also, knowing what the accountability situation is determines the degree of comfort in terms of solutions that are internal, external, and is sort of a sliding scale there. So there really is still a very strong interdependency between that, and I'm one of those that still fears that we are still in the deadly embrace period where one group is kind of waiting on the other group and vice versa. And we're moving ahead in that slowly, but it's a hard move to make. And then this last one was added last night. It's not on the one I sent. It was one that has been put but hasn't really been discussed much on control over ICANN operational performance as an accountability issue, and I haven't gotten to the point of understanding it well enough to explain it to y'all.
Thank you very much, Avery. I will now move to Jonathan, co-chair of the CWG, to give him the opportunity to say a few words. After that, I would like to open the discussion for immediate reactions from this group on the paper that we just discussed. And I would also like to give a heads up to Steve Del Bianco, who's been the rapporteur, or who still is the rapporteur for what we call work area number two. And I would like to get some feedback from you as to whether you think that these areas are something that we already have on the radar or whether there are any aspects in there which are new to our deliberations. But before we do that, as promised, I'd like to give the microphone, hand the microphone to Jonathan Robinson, who has joined us remotely. Jonathan.
Thanks, Thomas. Can you confirm you can hear me okay?
We can hear you all right.
Good. I hope there's not too much echo or anything. Look, you and Avery have done a good job of introducing the topic and covering things, so I won't go into a lot of detail and also recognizing that I am remote. You highlighted that we've been talking together and working together, the co-chairs of the two groups, which is clearly critical. And Avery's just highlighted how that work is continuing in terms of synchronizing the work in other areas as well. There's clearly various challenges that exist in both the substance of the work of both groups and the logistics of working between them, and probably most notably around the timescales, and therefore synchronizing and making sure that our work is appropriately synchronized as we do it. And as you know, and members of the group will know, we've exchanged a series of communications, which most recently was your high-level statement and then this document that came out last night that Avery's just worked through. And I think what we've begun to recognize is that the work of the CWG, that's the group that I'm a co-chair of with Lisa Furr, necessarily has to get out ahead of you, your group, this group, in terms of the speed with which we're working. We started our work earlier, and we have arguably a more pressing timescale. But we'll still rely very heavily on the work of this group, and critically, of course, then the logistical part is how we deal with that. I'll refer you to the flowchart, which is still work in progress, which we've exchanged, and would be good to come back to at some point and make sure that we end up with a common view of that, a refined version of that, which looks at and attempts to illustrate that interrelationship graphically. And it's clear through all of this that there will be a series of conditions on which our proposal, that is the work of the CWG on the transition, will rely on the work of this group and ultimately depend on that. And we've begun to refer to those as conditions. I wanted to touch on that very briefly because it could be an area of sensitivity where it's seen that the CWG is somehow dictating the work of this group, or and it's not intended to be that in any sense. But I think it's recognized that through the proposal that develops, and as Avery highlighted effectively, the current variants of that proposal, the CWG work will necessarily rely on the work of this group. And in so doing, it's likely that the eventual proposal coming out of the CWG will put within that proposal certain conditions that need to be met for the proposal to retain its validity. And that's what we've begun to think of and refer to as, in very shorthand, conditional accountability, or conditions which need to be met in terms of accountability developments and changes in order to retain the validity of our proposal. And again, to highlight that scope and that those conditions will vary depending on the final proposal that the CWG develops. But nevertheless, the scope that's been prepared for this group, I hope, will provide very useful guide and input into your work. So I think that's probably enough to say, Thomas. I really want to just highlight that in particular, how we got to the need for a proposal that is conditional on certain key accountability areas being met, and how we will rely on this group, therefore. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Jonathan. And I think without having conducted a consensus call in this group, it's safe to say that we don't perceive your input as dictating what we should be doing. In fact, I think the opposite is the case. We have provided you with high-level statements sort of spelling out an invitation that you might build on what we are about to work on, or what we're working on, and I think that your response shows that this collaboration works efficiently. So I think that's much appreciated, and you shouldn't be afraid that there are any sensitivities with this. As promised, I would like to give both the colleagues in the room as well as those participating remotely the opportunity to share some initial thoughts or some immediate some feedback to this paper with us. So while you're warming up to that, I think we can move to Steve first. Or Steve, would you like to have a few more minutes to go through it? Steve, please.
Thanks, Thomas. Steve Del Bianco. With work area 2, just as rapporteur then, I think what you've asked me to do is to take a look at these 5 items that Aubrey's reviewed from the CWG and see how they map to things that are currently in the inventory on work area 2, if I have that right. So the first thing I would say is that our charter for this CCWG is explicit on page 3, that we are not to look at the IANA functions. It's not within the scope of the CCWG because it's being dealt with by the CWG stewardship. So we were careful to stick to our charter, but very happy to answer requests or offers from CWG for interaction, and glad to be accommodating this. On several of our previous calls, we noted the idea that if we created independent review mechanisms that were stronger than what we have today, they may well suit the purposes that the CWG had in mind for several of its initiatives, and it's totally appropriate to look at it in this way. So going through the 5 that Aubrey just talked about, the first was this notion of budget. And then in the inventory for Work Area 2, right on page 1, and for those of you who don't have the Work Area 2 inventory, I would just refer to Grace's earlier emails, or Grace, you could potentially even put that link in the chat for people. So with respect to budget, as Aubrey and Jonathan indicated, there is an enumerated power of this permanent cross-community working group in the inventory, a permanent cross-community working group, which for shorthand we call the members, because I guess in this statutory sense, ICANN's bylaws would allow the creation of members, which is anticipated in the Articles of Incorporation. If the members had one of the 5 enumerated powers that's on page 1 of our inventory, it is to approve annual proposed ICANN budget. We haven't talked about a voting threshold. And we did clarify that members, these permanent cross-community working group, wouldn't make line item changes to an ICANN budget, but could potentially disapprove a budget that was proposed. So that's at a very high level, and it's not likely to scratch the itch of what Aubrey put up there with respect to budget level accountability. That sounds as if it's a little more granular and affecting the way that the IANA functions themselves are funded. So I don't think the mechanism that the CCWG has for budget up or down approval at the high level, I don't think that's really going to solve their issue on accountability. Move to the second one. Great. Second one on Aubrey's list was accountability for re-delegation decisions. I will note that Jonathan and Lisa had sent us about 3 weeks ago three items that they asked us to put into the inventory. The first was to indicate that CWG was in support of independent review. And the second are two items on CCWG page 2. One of them was independent certification for delegation and redelegation requests. And right after it was independent appeals panel for contested root zone changes and who is. So those are indicated. You probably have seen them at the top of page 2 on our inventory. And their inventory, they're supported by the CWG. We've never dived into those items before. We put them on there only because the CWG asked us to. So it's hard to know if there's a certification prior to a delegation or redelegation that that probably is happening beforehand, and it's not a post-delegation review. It sounds to me like what this accountability for a redelegation decision is a post-delegation appeals process. So it's possible that the independent review process that we've structured might be helpful to that. But I need to learn more about the differences between an independent review of board actions, which is number 3, and number 2, an accountability for redelegations. Because if it's the board that's acting, then we go right to number 3 on the CWG list, which is independent review of board actions. That is something that our cross-community working group has in the inventory as one of the abilities of the new permanent cross-community working group or member group could refer to an independent review panel or potentially make the decisions themselves, depending on what the consensus is. Inherent in that is this notion that the independent review panel would not be three randomly chosen individuals on the moment, but rather selected individuals from a more permanently seated group of experienced experts who know a little bit about ICANN's processes and perhaps even care about precedent of their decisions. So I do think we have a strong crossover on number 3, the independent review of board actions. Turning to number 4 of the CWG, which was an independent appeals panel, or IAP. I would like to learn more about the scope of the IAP decisions, if they're very micro in scope with respect to who is changes, redelegation requests, or are they broad enough that they would, in fact, touch upon decisions that the board makes? Because we in the CCWG have been focusing hard on board-level decisions and not as much on operational decisions. So this is the second item where I'm coming back with a question. I'd like to learn more about what the CWG has in mind as examples of decisions that go to the independent appeals panel. It really begs the issue of why does the CWG have both number 4 and number 3? They both involve the board. And finally, control over board decisions. When I read that fifth one, that's the fifth one on the CWG list, thank you, Grace, that to me dovetails straight back up into number 3, which was an independent review of a board action. And it would be my interpretation that those are redundant items in the list. They may have had unique origins, but I would even invite CWG to consolidate number 3 and 5. Thomas, I hope that's helpful.
That's most helpful, and I'd like to ask whether anybody who's also following the CWG discussions has answers to Steve's questions. Aubrey, please.
Hi, this is Aubrey speaking again. I think on the fifth one, it includes elements of prior to a board decision, not just responding to. And I think that's possibly the difference. But as you noted on all of these, we talk about the relations and there's slight nuanced differences between is it a board decision, is it a wider staff operational decision, and such. So, but I think that this one includes an element of driving a decision, not just reacting to one. Thank you.
Thanks, Avi. Ebert, you've raised your hand.
I've got two things. One to Leon. Leon mentioned that apparently he's of the opinion that speakers here can only speak from their constituencies or for their sending organization. This is definitely not the case. as far as the CCNSO is concerned, there are different opinions or different streams, but we were not selected or elected or chosen to come here to represent the CCNSO. We have no mandate, and I, for one, will do whatever I want. Secondly, I have a problem with the accountability for redelegations and wonder where this is coming from. I personally, it is quite obvious that G Space and others don't really know how the CCNSO or the CCTLDs work. Think before we talk about national, national mechanisms, national governments, we should actually know what we're talking about. The sovereignty issues that some governments assert, or the idea that governments may have any authority over CCTLDs that correspond to two letters, is totally controversial. I totally disagree. Some governments disagree with me. Some government agrees. How this finds itself in such a document is beyond my understanding, and is not consensus possible.
Thank you, Eberhard, and thank you particularly for raising that point, because we had planned to proactively bring it up, unless somebody in the room or remotely would have done so. As you will recall, the charters for the CWG and our charter are meant to be complementary. So we are not tasked to deal with IANA-related decisions. Yet, there might be an opportunity to use comparable or identical accountability mechanisms that could be used for both areas. But I think we have to be crystal clear on where the red line is that we shouldn't step over. And I think that we need that both for our group to be clear on what we're actually mandated to work on, but I also think we have to send a very clear message back to the CWG that we well understood the concerns of CCTLD operators in not trying to conquer CC space by applying mechanisms that are developed for the G world. I've asked Mathieu, who is a member of the CCNSO, whether he could recap the major concerns for us, so that actually we can go on record with having understood what the concerns are, and also making it very clear that it's not our intention to mission creep, which is a threat as we are now intertwining the work of the two groups more. Mathieu.
Thank you, Thomas. This is indeed, as Everett mentioned, a topic that is highly controversial, including within CCTLDs, about what would be the relevant authority to challenge a decision regarding a delegation or redelegation. But I think there is consistency across CCTLD managers, and a number of governments would also be concerned, I would expect, that decisions be made outside of the local internet community, the local jurisdiction. I can go fast. Okay. So the concern would be some of the CCTLD managers would be concerned that a redress mechanism or review mechanism would give a government the ability to mandate the delegations, and others would be concerned that a decision could be made outside of local jurisdictions. I think that's the basic controversy, but I think there would be more common ground in saying that not many CCTLDs, at least most CCTLDs I know of, and we haven't gone through a consensus call, and there's no policy on that. I want to be very clear. That it would not be the generic, the same system as for the GTLDs, where policy authority is better recognized at global level. So that's the concern we need to address with the CWG, whether there needs to be an IANA-specific accountability mechanism for delegations, regulations. And I hear a number of voices within the CCTLD world calling for an IANA-specific, maybe CCTLD-specific type of mechanism, rather than a generic one.
Thank you very much, Mathieu. I see Ebert hand is raised. Ebert.
I don't want to make this into a dialogue. I think it's probably better if we sort of make a presentation on how the CC space differs from a G space. For example, the terminology used is often unclear, and we have spent 5 years of work to sort of interpret the basic terminology. What does delegation mean? Delegation does not mean that an incumbent, that a government is unhappy with an incumbent, for example, and can demand that he be removed. It means if a new CCTLD is to be established or the manager changes, during the process of selection of the manager, the government has input as a special stakeholder. I think it might be good if we sort of prepare a 10-minute systematic overview that everybody knows what we're talking about. Steve yesterday mentioned that sometimes the G-space feels that the CCs don't behave according to the ICANN rules. That's an understandable point. The point is we do, but we only behave under the rules that apply to us. And it's quite clear that the silos that we have in ICANN, we are the CCs, we don't talk to anybody, technical things we do among ourselves and so on, we do among ourselves, whether we want it or not. We should maybe present a little paper or make a little presentation on where we differ and why this is so.
Thank you, Ebert. Just going back, it's a very kind offer, and I think it's something to offer as well to the CWG for, and maybe there will be a shared group at some point working on the document presented by Hervé, and that's where it should be appropriate, but probably not for the whole CCWG, as I think we are overstepping into IANA-specific decisions. But we take your offer, and I think the framework of interpretation has some very useful terminology in there.
So we have a queue forming, and I would like to apologize to Cavus, Lisa, and Steve, because your hands were raised, but then for technical reasons they were lowered, so I thought that you had withdrawn your intention to speak. Cavus, you're first.
Yes, guten Tag, meine Damen und Herren. Being in Germany, starting with this. Thank you very much, distinguished co-chairs. There is a question that we have raised, and still for some of us, if not for all, is not clear, and that is interaction between CWG and Workstream 1 of CCWG. The CWG is one of the operating communities for which input were asked by ICG, and recently ICG wrote a note to CWG indicating that it seems that they may not be in a position to complete the work by deadline of 15th of January, and more time may be needed, and asked CWG to indicate by latest 31st of January, the deadline that they could be in a position to transmit or submit the result of their works to ICG, and they added a passage, a paragraph, indicating that taking into account that the outcome of CWG before coming to ICG need to provide sufficient time period for the community to comment. Because what ICG expects, having information output of the CWG with the comment of the community, because it is very important, and some of the preliminary review indicated that there were not sufficient time for community to comment. So that has been indicated. Now, my question is that, what is the relation between CWG and Workstream 1 of the CCWG? Do they send us something before sending for community of public and after ICG, or there would be no such interaction directly, and they expect if there is anything from us, we will indicate them without being asked that this is our output, have a look to that and make a community. It would be extremely important if the chairs kindly clarify this matter.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Cavus. And I think it fits quite nicely that Lisa Fuhr, who is one of the co-chairs of the CWG, is next in the queue. And I think she's best placed to respond to that question. But also, I guess that's the you're talking about the concept of conditional accountability, and that's something that we will need to discuss as we move on. So your point is well noted. Lisa, you're next.
Oh, thank you, Thomas. You gave me quite a task to describe the relation between the CWG and the CCWG. I think it's not completely clear where the boundaries are, but one of our tasks is actually to find a solution for the INS stewardship transition, and while doing this, there might be issues that will be covered by the CWG, and that's, in my opinion, why we try and identify these areas and send those to you where there might be overlapping issues with your work. What I was going to talk about was actually the delegation and redelegation issue with the CCTLDs, because I think it's very important to distinguish between the actual decision of a delegation, redelegation, and the procedure regarding this. And I know a lot of CCs are very afraid of having any decisions made by ICANN and IANA on this issue, but I think it's important to have actually a redress mechanism for the situation where you have ICANN doing nothing. So if you have a registry or government asking for something and ICANN don't comply with this request, what do you do? Where do you go? So this is more actual procedure and not the decision of the delegation, redelegation itself. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. And back to Cavus' point, we will take good note of that issue. We will have to discuss that further, how the two work areas are intertwined. And we will also hear from Bruce as to what the board thinks, and we will get back to that point, so it's not being ignored, but I hope that we'll have a sufficient answer for everybody, because we all need clarity on the process and next steps by the end of this session. Steve.
Thank you, Steve DelBianco. I had the benefit last night of 5 minutes of Eberhard going through this discussion on the differences on CCTLDs. It was very enlightening for me, because I am truly one of those who was confused. I had to depart for dinner before Eberhard got a chance to explain the key question relevant to the CWG's number two, this notion of accountability for redelegations. I honestly don't know whether the board of ICANN is involved at all on a CCTLD redelegation. Once a nation and its CCTLD operator and the courts and legislatures of that nation, once they have worked it out and a redelegation request comes up for a CCTLD, does in fact ICANN have any decisions to take with respect to that redelegation? Because if they don't, then I want to be clear, none of the mechanisms we've got in place would necessarily create an independent review of a board decision, because in those cases the board doesn't make a decision. Now, having said that, there is some possibility that there could be an ombudsman complaint or some other complaint or objection process that would generate a challenge to which the board may have to react, and then that board reaction could be challenged. But the way I see it right now, I don't understand how an independent review of a board decision would be called into play if the board didn't make any decisions. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. I saw both Bruce and Sebastian raise their hands when you spoke, Steve. So if you would like to respond to that directly, I think we should allow for that response to Steve now. Okay. Sebastian, you were a little bit earlier. Did you want to...
Chris don't hear me.
So do you agree that...
If you want an official answer from the board, ask a board member, not me. Thank you.
I know that you're experienced in that sector.
Yeah, but I didn't want to answer. I wanted to add something
okay, great.
In this issue.
That's
what... And I know that it's a discussion we had within the board when I was in the board. If you want me to speak now or you want...
No, we'll get back to you. I just wanted to check who wanted to provide an immediate response to Steve. So, Chris, please.
Thank you, Thomas. Good morning, everybody. Chris Despain. Steve, a couple of points. I wish I had a straight answer to your question. I'll try and give you the best one I can. There is nothing, as far as I know, and I think as far as the CCTLD community knows, there is nothing written down anywhere that says the board has to pass a resolution or make a decision in respect to a delegation or redelegation. In practice, what has happened over the relevantly recent years is that the board has in fact been received from IANA a report that says, like a traffic light report, all green, amber, whatever, that says go ahead or don't go ahead. What the board has done, and the board does this now pursuant to the last iteration of the NTAA contract, I think I'll get this right, but Suzanne may be able to help me if I get it wrong, is to effectively tick that the IANA staff have followed the relevant policy in reaching the decision, which is what I think from memory the NTAA contract says. What the board does not do, and as far as I'm aware never has done, is say, yes, we will move .au from Alda to Steve Dalbianco's cup, or vice versa. So it's interesting when you talk about accountability mechanisms in the context of delegation and redelegation of CCTLDs, how to deal with that. And it's one of the reasons why the CCTLDs, I think in general, feel that if there needs to be an appeals, for want of a better term, an appeals process on a decision, that is something that should be created specifically for that, because you would need to have panelists to look at it who were very experienced in the particular areas that you're talking about. And to give you one very specific example, just to give you an understanding of how complicated it can get, RSC 1591 says that there, and I'm giving you shorthand here before Eberhard leaps in and tells me that I've used the wrong words, that there needs to be the support of the local internet community of the manager, of a new manager, and that should be demonstrated. Well, the problem is, how do you demonstrate that in regimes where what the leader says goes? So, to take an example of redelegation like that, you might want to bring in a particular cultural expert who understands the culture of the particular territory that you're talking about to demonstrate to you that actually the policy has been followed. So it doesn't fit under, in my personal view, under the general appeals mechanism. It would need to be very specific. Hope that's helpful.
Thanks, Chris. Bruce, you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, I'll just try and simplify that a little bit. So, yeah, basically the board does, essentially doing a process review, pretty similar to what NTIA is doing actually. So really it's just reviewing, has the IANA function, what's my voice all of a sudden, has the IANA function actually performed its task properly? And, you know, got a report from the local community, got a report from the current CCTLD manager, etc. And as Chris said, it's a checklist. There are accountability mechanisms that then could come into play, though, Steve. So looking at reconsideration, for example, the reconsideration request could come to the board following that decision and say there were staff actions or inactions that contradicted the policy. with evidence, and we'd look at that. It could say that the decisions were made without consideration of material information that was provided. So if someone was saying, I provided this material information to the INA function about this redelegation, it wasn't taken into account, then the board would look at that, etc. So I think, yes, the accountability mechanisms do come into play following any decision the board would make. And all the board is really doing is saying, certifying, you know, that the process has been followed. If there's evidence that the process has not been followed, then that kicks off an accountability mechanism and it would be reviewed.
Thank you, Bruce and Chris. Very helpful. So I think the answer to the question is clear now, that if the board ticked the box with respect to the material information being considered and the local affected community filed a reconsideration request, and then the board made a decision. It makes a decision maybe not to reconsider or to reconsider. Under the Work Area 2 inventory, page 1, the cross-community working group or members could challenge the board's decision to say no to the reconsideration. So I think that order, that second order challenge is the community saying we don't believe the board acted properly. And that would allow an independent review panel to examine whether your reconsideration request was appropriate, and that would be binding. So that would mean that, reeling this all the way back, that item 2 that Avery discussed, this notion of independent review, item 2, accountability for redelegations, it sounds as if such a decision were challenged in a reconsideration and the board took action on that reconsideration, then we have a mechanism that could be helpful to the CWG.
Thanks, Steve. I think this is a very critical point for us to be clear on, and I think we have to close the queue after having heard the speakers that have shown their interest to speak so far, because we need a few minutes to talk about process and timelines. Since Jonathan has indicated that he would also like to respond to this very question or respond to Bruce, I'd like to call Jonathan to speak, and then we go back to the queue.
Okay, thanks, Thomas. I hope it's appropriate that I speak now, and I'll be very brief. Just to highlight that for the avoidance of any doubt, this work that's come from the CWG explicitly and recognizes the distinction between CCTLDs and GTLDs and recognizes that different approaches may need to be taken in the two instances. So should anyone have any doubt about that, that's not the case. It's quite clear that there are different frameworks for how this might work, and it may be much more subtle and complicated. So that recognized, while it's not resolved, it's certainly recognized up front, and I'd just like that to be understood by the group and on record. Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan. Let's move back to the queue. We have Avery, then Grace for Izumi, Tijani, and Sebastian.
Thank you. Avery speaking. Very little to say at this point. What Lisa said implicitly and Jonathan just said, I just wanted to point out that the CWG does have as strong a CCTLD component in its membership as does this group. Not talking about the people, talking about numbers. And that, you know, I know on this wording you see a lot of hedges in this wording that were specifically put in there because of recognizing that. So while extra papers are always good to explain, just because I'm a G-type that's working as editor on this, there has certainly been a lot of CCTLD input into each of these words. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Next in the queue is Tijani.
Thank you. Tijani speaking. Overlap interaction between CWG, CCWG. I have been on the drafting team of the charters of both CWG and CCWG. And I can tell you that in both charters, things are very clearly defined. For the CWG, only the accountability mechanisms related to the operation of the IANA naming function is included in their scope. For this group, we was clear that anything related to the accountability of the operation of this function is not in the scope of our group. So things are very clearly defined, but this is not to say that there is no relation, because suppose that the CWG decides that they will go for the contract co, for example. If they do so, we will have to come with accountability mechanisms that will be different from if they decide to go with an internal ICANN solution. So there is interaction, but it doesn't mean that they cannot finish their work or they cannot work if we don't provide them with the output of our work. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. I think I tend to agree that the charters are clearly delineated, but I think the implementation of what's there in theory in the charter, that's the issue. And I think we have to be very clear on not mission creep into what the task for the CWG is. Sebastian, it's your turn.
Thank you. I was requested to be short. I just want to say that it could be interesting to review the process, the work done by the board regarding the CCTLD delegation or redelegation, because the explanation given to you was never a satisfaction to me, because at the end of the day, if you have the box of the local community not tick, but the rest of the box are ticked done by IANA, then it's passed. And as an end user, I always feel that if the voice of end user are not recognized in any process, it's not a good thing. And it's generally speaking, as we say here, yes, it's going well, but I am not sure if you go to detail, it's a reality. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. As promised, we're going to talk a little bit about process and deadlines. And I'd like to give the floor to Bruce to share the board's views on that with us, please.
On the timeline, not on delegations, is that right? Just making sure I got the switch of topics. I think the request that I've received from the co-chairs of this working group was saying, what's the board's expectation with respect to timing and some of the dependencies? I think we're expecting that before the ICG and the cross-community working group on naming feels comfortable with finalising their work and submitting their work through to NTIA, that they'll want some confidence that there are appropriate accountability mechanisms in place within ICANN itself. From that perspective, looking at the timing of the meetings that we have this year and the opportunity for public comment, we'd recommend that at least the high priority items from this working group can be made available for public comment and for final board decision by the Buenos Aires meeting, because that would then give an opportunity for the CWG on naming and the ICG that's looking at their overall report for the IANA to be finalised. So that's kind of our recommendation, just looking at the sort of timing and opportunities for meetings, because after Buenos Aires, then there's a big gap. We don't really meet again until Dublin in October. And I think this is an important decision that the board will want to be making, you know, at a public meeting with community input rather than, you know, just doing it as a board call sometime during the year. So that's kind of our thinking. And I realise that's a challenge. You know, there's a lot of work that this group would need to get done. My advice really would be try and focus on the really material, what I would call the top five. You know, what are the top five mechanisms you think need to be put in place in ICANN to allow the rest of the work in the other groups as well as the other work in the accountability to proceed. So try and identify your top five and try and at least get those done in time for approval in June.
Thank you very much, Bruce. I would hope that it's not five, but maybe three topics that we're working on. So, any questions for Bruce? I think it's very helpful to get insight into the board's planning for this. I think that's something that we need to factor into our work. I see no questions at the moment. I think in terms of next steps, what we have planned to do is further discuss with the co-chairs of the CWG. We're going to further flesh out as to how we can best operationalize the concept of conditional accountability and the interrelation of the work of the two groups. And the plan is to demonstrate to the interested audience, to the community, that we're actually working together, that we're talking together, and we thought it would be a good idea to issue a joint statement by the co-chairs of both groups towards the end of this week, so that everybody understands that we are closely collaborating and that we are working towards, coming up with a cohesive proposal. Any immediate reactions to that plan? Don't see any at the moment. So I think with... Kavus, you've raised your hand.
Yes, provided that you clear the point of what do we mean by conditional accountability. Still there are discussions. What does it mean? Thank you.
Mathieu would like to respond to that.
No, I think this really goes to the heart of the question that you raised earlier, Kavus, regarding how the two processes interact. And the words conditional accountability were put on a diagram by the CWG last week after their intensive work weekend. And I think what Thomas is referring to is we would like to, jointly with the leadership of the CWG, to provide clarity about what this is about. It may not be the most appropriate choice of words, but we need to be extremely clear about how there's an interaction between those two groups and how the CWG is going to be able to provide input to the ICG even before our workstream one has not been fully completed. And that is what we want to work on with the CWG co-chairs and provide a statement on, so that the community can say, okay, we understand how it's going to work out. We are going out of the deadly embrace phase, and we're comfortable to work like this. That's our intent with Lisa and Jonathan in the next few days, and hopefully by the end of this meeting we'll be in a position also to provide comfort to those who are questioning what is going to be the outcome of our CCWG group. So it's not a definitive answer to your question, Kavus, obviously, but just to mention, it's just that we would like to provide this clarity about what this means in terms of process. And I think we're not very far from finding this.
Thanks, Mathieu. Jonathan's hand is raised, so Jonathan, if I could ask you to keep it brief, please.
Very briefly, Thomas. I did make this point at the outset, so it is repetition, but just to be clear, this choice, as Mathieu referenced, of the phrase conditional accountability, it's shorthand and it's not very helpful because it's not accurate. The proposal of the CWG will be reliant on certain accountability measures being put in place, and to that extent the proposal from the CWG to the ICG is likely to be conditional on those measures being put in place, and that is what this shorthand refers to. This is the conditions on which the CWG proposal will rely on in relation to accountability. So it's really an effective mechanism to link the two, but in truth, there's no such thing as conditional accountability. Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan. In summary, I would like to confirm a couple of action items. I think we should ask the questions that Steve has brought up and try to get responses from the CWG. Also, I think, our group now has more clarity on where the demarcation between the CWG and the CCWG is. Nonetheless, I think it's the task of the CWG to confirm where this demarcation is when it comes to delegation and redelegation. So I think if it would be good for us to give this question back to the CWG to maybe come up with some language that we could use for our purposes as well. There's one remaining point that we would have loved to touch upon, and that is legal advice that the CWG is about to seek, but we're going to discuss that as we move to the towards the end of the day when we talk about the engagement with the advisors and legal advice as such. And with that, yes, I think we should use our work area number three, which is CWG related, to enter into that exchange of communication with the CWG. And with that, I'd like to close this very interesting discussion and move to the next agenda item, which is going to be chaired by Mathieu.
Thank you very much, Thomas. I think it was important to start with this update from the CWG, as it really sets the scene for our work, and it's an extremely important input into what our high priority list might look like, although it's not the only input. Another of these very important inputs is the list of contingencies. We have been working on that list within the work area four, whose rapporteur is Eric Brenner-Williams. I haven't seen Eric on the call. I think it's a very inconvenient time of the day for him. So, but we believed as co-chairs we had to address this point early in our work, because it's also setting a lot of the scene for drafting our priorities. So just to recap, our charter states that in order to facilitate evaluation and adoption of its proposals, the CCWG accountability is expected to provide a detailed description on how its proposals would provide an adequate level of resistance to contingencies, and the mention is between quotes, stress tests, within the scope of each work stream. And that is why this work area is extremely important, because this is, by testing our proposals against these contingencies, we will demonstrate that we are actually enhancing ICANN's accountability and putting it in a position to be resilient in case of adverse events coming up in the future, because obviously this might be on the long term, and we probably won't have an opportunity every other year to review ICANN's accountability mechanisms. I wouldn't wish so, considering the amount of effort. So we have been provided by Work Area 4, under Eric's leadership, a document which contains, at this point, I think, 21 scenarios, with each of them being described by an event, triggering event, if you will, a threat, and the consequences. And I think we're going to have them on the screen very soon. So coming into this meeting, I think that I wouldn't have the ambition in 50 minutes to go through each of them. I think it would be probably tedious work, and also totally impossible to stay within a timeline. However, I think the consideration we have to give to these scenarios is whether we want or can afford to keep 21, or if we want to narrow the list or focus, upon which criteria would we do that? Why would we focus or maybe merge some scenarios? And how can we ensure we get to a list that really fits the contingencies that we have to deal with, unless someone else outside of this group says we have not addressed the right threats? And And this is something where we have some inputs. We have a number of statements from Larry Strickling on the one side. Other stakeholders have expressed their concerns about certain contingencies happening. We're in Europe. There's a European Union Council meeting that actually provided a number of inputs on what they were expecting. And we also have, in the discussions around work area 2, define what we would think would be the issues we wanted to address, and therefore we need to make sure we map this as well in our definition of Workstream 1. And so actually focusing on the main contingencies is going to be extremely useful for our discussion regarding Workstream 1, because those are the problems we want either to solve or make sure they do not reappear in the future. So the coming into this meeting, we tried to propose to you for discussion now, and I'm going to open the discussion both on the list if there are ideas for scenarios to be added or removed, but also, and more importantly, I think for our future work, we have been discussing about what we think should be the three questions we would ask to help us narrow this list to the main contingencies, at least to be considered for Workstream 1. So the things we're putting up on screen are, so the three questions are actually four. I like to be accurate. First question, is the contingency already adequately covered by existing mechanisms? And of course, we have work area one inventory, which is extremely helpful to help us define this. So for everyone's clarity, work area one was an inventory of existing accountability mechanisms. Second, is this contingency relevant to the transition? And I would add, if so, how? Because I think a number of the contingencies are obviously quite generic at this stage. And one of the questions is, how are they related to the transition? Of course, if I take one of the most easiest, one of the scenarios is I can unilaterally canceling the affirmation of commitment. Of course, that is, in my opinion, quite relevant to the transition, because there are a number of accountability mechanisms embedded into the affirmation of commitment. And if I can were to withdraw from that after transition, of course, the leverage of the United States government to say, no, you have to stay within the affirmation of commitment, would be significantly lower. And therefore, I would say it's relevant to the transition. But it might not be the case for all of the contingencies we've identified so far. Third question, is it of particular concern to stakeholders? And it'd be great to have a couple of illustrations. And I think most illustrations we have through work area 2, where we have listed stakeholders' feedback on accountability that request certain accountability mechanisms, and usually by referring to a thread. And fourth, if it's not adequately addressed, what are the next steps? What we mean by this is, would we have to amend an existing mechanism? It can be just fixed through a tweak. Or is it a new mechanism that has to be dealt with, or is it a significant reform? So I'd like to open the floor at this point for comments on this way forward, on contingencies. And I know I have a line forming, starting with Becky, right in front of me. Go ahead, Becky.
Thanks. I think that it is important implicit in number two, is it relevant to the transition? But I think that we should sort of specifically note that any of the kind of conditions or requirements that NTIA laid out about the transition should be specifically addressed. And I wanted to say, I think that these stress test condition scenarios are critically important for us to be able to demonstrate that we have, you know, thought about the issues that are out there and have made careful evaluations of it. I just think I know everybody knows that, you know, there's some consternation in the U.S. Congress, for example, and so these contingencies and stress tests are really important for that purpose.
I think that would qualify both for is it relevant to the transition and is it of particular concern to stakeholders, those stakeholders being the NTIA or the U.S. Congress or the European Union Council or any other. Thank you, Becky. I think it's a really good point. Steve, you are next.
Steve DelBianco with the CSG. Picking up on what Becky Burr just said, in March this year, when Congress held hearings, the Commerce Committee in the House took particular interest in this. And the chairman of that committee opened the hearing by pointing out the testimony of my group, NetChoice, as indicating stress tests. And he said this would be a very helpful way to look at the transition. And I have to convey the importance of that approach is that the positioning of stress test scenarios was the way in which concerned members of Congress could allow the transition to proceed, as opposed to delay or block it, to allow it to proceed in the confidence that certain guardrails and tests and questions would be asked about the accountability mechanisms in place to relieve the concerns that would have otherwise led to say, hold on, don't make a transition. So these had a very valuable effect upon a lot of the skeptics and critics in Washington, and I realize this is the last time Washington will have much to say about anything like this because the transition severs that core. But Becky is right. There's an expectation that they'll be there, and the stress tests that were submitted at the time were very close to what the BC eventually submitted, and they constitute items 14 through 21 on the list that all of us are considering today. So if we preserve some significant piece of those 10, we will have, I think, met our promise to the Commerce Committee, and I realize that, and Becky's right, the Congress is going to take a role on this. Now, having said that, the four questions that the chairs have put up here, with respect to question one, is it already covered? Well, that's the work of the cross-community working group. Once we discover the scenarios we're going to use, let's suppose it were 21, then we would have to go through each of the 21 and say, do the mechanisms that are work area one or work area to cover it. We wouldn't look at just one. We'd look at one or two to say, do we cover this stress test? So I would encourage you to reframe that. Is it already covered by existing or proposed mechanisms? With respect to relevance, the relevance doesn't have to be tying a particular stress test to something that would happen because of the IANA transition. It's not at all. The notion is that once there's no more ability to pull the IANA contract from ICANN, that the transition has occurred, then you have to look at accountability mechanisms that we need to put into place to answer the scenarios. This is the leverage concept that we've discussed many times in the CCWG. That's why the question of relevance, I don't believe, is applicable. It's whatever the CCWG thinks are relevant tests of accountability. Those make their way into the stress test. Those make their way into work area two. The relevance is a function of the leverage, not of something that's in the transition. And number three, concern to stakeholders, as you said, the chairs are right. If there are groups supporting it and there's a consensus, whether it's full or partial consensus, then it's relevant. And then finally, number four is the work of the full cross-community working group. Four can't be the work of just work area four because it's all of us who take a look at it. And I did want to suggest for a next step, let's suppose one of the BC stress tests, number 21, the last on the list, is particularly relevant. We've been talking about it all morning. I'll read it to you. It says, number 21, a government or government telecom minister instructs ICANN to redelegate a country code CCTLD despite objections from many current registrants and user communities in the country concerned. Well, what do you know? That's what we were discussing this morning. You know, the answer to that might be that we don't have an ability to remedy that. And you check that, you check that box to say we examined the stress test. We don't have an ability to address that, because that's up to the countries themselves and their courts and legislatures and their communities to work out. And you know what? That's an adequate answer. The answer doesn't have to be, oh, my gosh, we need to go figure something out. Now, Bruce may have saved us by saying that a reconsideration request by the community would trigger a board decision. And what do you know? We do have an accountability mechanism to challenge a board decision on a reconsideration request. So in many cases, it won't be very much work to do number four. But I don't think it's something that happens just in the work area, number four. I think it happens across community working groups.
I can see it's a good point, Steve, and I think we'll need to be discussing later on our next steps and how we proceed and through which organization and process. Athena, I saw your flag raised.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good morning. I think the questions, well, they make sense to me. I would like some clarification. Depending on the answer in every of these questions, what would be the next step for this group? Are we going to prioritize, for example, the scenarios that are relevant to the transition? Are we going to abandon maybe some scenarios that are not relevant, to that are of not concern to stakeholders? I would like some clarification on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Athena. Indeed, I think that the proposed way forward would be to try and find a way to focus on some contingencies, because we had the assumption that 21 would be quite a heavy load on our group to demonstrate, and therefore we are trying through these questions to find some form of agreement around what are the most critical contingencies to demonstrate that we have been doing our homework on stress tests. I have a list. I have a queue forming. Was that a response to that, Thomas?
Just a very quick direct response to Athena. May well be that the group chooses to add or remove contingencies. So I can't predict the outcome of that. That's going to be up for discussion. But even more importantly, we should narrow that down to the items to be dealt with in Workstream 1. So it may well be that there are factors that we reserve for Workstream 2, but that's for the group to decide. But ideally, we would actually get feedback from this group in the course of this meeting on which items we should particularly focus. But all of them will be appropriately dealt with.
I have Eberhard on the next speaker. Please, Eberhard.
I just wanted to explain to Steve again how difficult it is to even talk about things that one doesn't really understand the details of. The thing, a government minister demands a delegation to be removed, and ICANN must follow. Why must ICANN follow? What implication this has on the property rights, intellectual property or otherwise existing rights on the incumbent? It's not as easy. Even such a stress test, and I'm just getting incredibly detailed, it's not as easy as it sounds. So I really, really, really think before we even look at any of the things, we should familiarize us in detail with what we're talking about.
Thanks, Everett. The stress test exercise is not going to be an easy one, and that's why we are anticipating that we would certainly have interest in focusing on the most critical contingencies, because it's going to be about details as well. And the feedback we'll get is, you haven't thought about all the details, and we need to make sure we anticipate that. Next in the queue is Cavus.
Thank you. I have the number of contingencies.
Excuse me, can you move closer to the microphone?
Yes, the number of contingencies mentioned, I exactly don't know how many, 24, so many now. The question is that I think the question two first is applied to them. You have list of contingencies, you ask, does this contingency is required for transition action or not, and then go the further whether they are covered if they are not covered. So your starting should be different. It makes the job easier. Because if you categorize, if you categorize the contingencies to the transition, and those who are not relating to the transition, they are the second group, and you have a different treatment, that may be help a little bit how to proceed. Thank you.
Very constructive, thank you. And absolutely a good sense. We will, Steve, you wanted to come back on the questions?
Yeah, if you don't mind, Steve Del Bianco, I would like to remind folks that our charter does more than simply say that we have to do scenarios. Our charter has four bullet points about how to do the stress tests and scenarios. We analyze the potential weaknesses, analyze existing remedies, define additional remedies or modification of existing remedies, and describe how the solutions would mitigate the risks. That should be in this document that we've been discussing, the full excerpt of our charter. And it doesn't involve numerical probability assignments. It doesn't involve numerical estimates of the cost of consequences. So none of that, which crept into some of the earlier conversation, needs to be part of this exercise, not in our charter. And it does make the challenge you spoke of, Matthew, a little bit easier, is that we don't do any math for these. It's not necessary for the charter. It's not necessary to go through the exercise. And keep in mind that for many of these stress tests, you ask yourself, does the board make a decision in this stress test? Oh, if the board makes a decision in the stress test, we have mechanisms to challenge a board decision. So the community can assert its will if, in fact, a stress test like this occurred. So in many cases, the answer to a stress test will be, see item two, because we'll already have prepared a remedy for the community to challenge and overturn a board decision.
I think you're raising a good point that our charter already identifies some deliverables regarding to stress tests, and some of them are very similar to the questions we're raising, so we should definitely harmonize the wording. We did not review thoroughly the charter before that, but I think that would be a valuable evolution of this. Now, I'd like to, in the remaining time, I'd like to focus about how we're going to address this, because it's significant work, and we need to we will need to deliver on that, on addressing those questions, and there are several ways to do that. So the first question is whether we task a work area, specific work group, on investigating and then reporting to the CCWG. And the second one is, the second option is, okay, do we split scenarios across various groups so that we share the load, or do we task a work group or the whole group to get deep into all of the 21, or do we rely on other methods to do that? And I've heard Steve mention that you thought it was a task to be shared amongst the whole CCWG rather than a specific work group. Can I start getting a sense within the room whether this opinion is widely shared or found as appropriate? No one in the queue.
Can you restate the question again properly?
So the question is, getting across the 21 or some, most of them and answering those questions that are currently on your screen, is it a task for a specific work group we would either rely on work area 4 or another work group, or should we keep that within the whole CCWG mailing list? Should we delegate this to a group or keep it in a group? Yeah. Steve, you wanted to elaborate?
I would, because now that we know, let's suppose we know what the 21 are. If the members of the CCWG were to read the 21 and we assigned a new work area to analyze the 21, that work area would conclude very different people than the ones who live in work area 4 today. Because as you read the 21, there are items in there that Eberhard, for instance, would be so valuable to have his input on. Number 17, it might be necessary to get some folks who manage root servers to come involved. Each of these scenarios calls for particular knowledge to bring in, so that if, in fact, we were going to give it to a subset of the CCWG, I would open that up to members of the CCWG who understand the items that are amongst the 21, and they could take first crack at it, both consolidating and answering your questions. If you're reticent, as I sense you are, reticent to simply dump that into the entire CCWG, given all the other things that are working on. But a new work area composed of people that know and understand the 21 would be a logical next step.
Anna?
I think I'm proposing something similar to what Steve said, but I'm not 100% sure. The decision has to be the decision of the work group, the full work group. The triage or drafting the position probably should be a subgroup, just because it's hard to work with a group this size. And that subgroup may be different for each of the questions. So you really need to put together working parties or something for each of the questions or for each group of questions, and then bring them back for full formal approval and for interrogation if necessary, you know, to make sure the whole work group understands why the decision was what it was.
I have a comment from Fiona.
I would like to just support what Alan has just explained. However, I would suggest that probably the chair of work area 4 would still be the person who guides the team, because then we might end up finding we're forming too many sub groups, and it becomes very hard to consolidate the work. But having different, we could group the different scenarios into those that are similar, so that experts of the different areas within the team, a larger group, are able to then give all their input for that particular scenario and advise the larger group appropriately. Thank you.
Thank you, Fiona. Cheryl?
Thank you. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. I disagree with your last point, Fiona. I think it's an entirely different set of skills that are required if we are going to not work with the full CCWG doing this analysis. And so if we're going to work in a new work party, I see no reason for the work of Work Area 4 to necessarily carry over. It's done its work. Thank you very much. Now we need a different set of skills and certainly a different set of guiding characteristics. Then translate immediately from Work Area 4. So if I can't have it, and I would prefer to have it as an activity of the whole, because I don't actually see it saving time by halving it off. It's got to come back to the Committee of the Whole anyway. And truth be known, a small subset of people with expertise and interest will fall out of the Committee of the Whole and do most of the work anyway. But I'm not going to die in a ditch over that. If you do a separate work party, I don't see that it has any need to carry over from leadership or membership of Work Area 4, and I will die in a ditch over that.
Okay, I think, anyway, it's very important that the whole group has a good understanding of what we're talking about, because it's really radiating towards everything we do at all stage. However, I'm for organizational purposes as well as relevance of discussion and not overloading everyone. I think this a good way forward into forming, on the one side, maybe some groups of contingencies, which analysis requires certain sets of skills, like the financial ones on the one side, and the very operational IANA type CCTRD experience, and that we look for small groups, three or four people, maybe no more, just to draft it. And I think the co-chairs could volunteer people, no problem. We can always point to specific categories of people so that they can report to the group with pre-drafted answers to the questions, and we can go from there. At some point, priority making is going to become a significant discussion. It was alluded to earlier that obviously scenarios that would be then found not relevant to the transition, we might have an easy time. But I'm not sure we're going to get a yes or no answer that easily. And so in parallel, we need to find out how we could define what is absolutely relevant and we couldn't live without it, and what would be a nice-to-have contingency analysis. I'm not sure we are ready now to get that feeling. Probably it's going to be easier once we have digged into some of examples. But I think it's worth keeping this question in mind for later. So what I would suggest, actually, I think I'm a little bit early on schedule, but I don't know if there are any last comments regarding the contingencies. Good suggestion by Thomas. While we are at it, we would appreciate to feel the temperature in the room around the list of 21. No, the question really is, do we all feel comfortable with this list as the basis for our further work? Or is there anything missing? Sorry? No, so the first thing is would be an open round of comments, whether you think someone has a comment regarding the 21, and then we would go to probably go to the AC room and feel whether we have agreement on that or not. Thomas, you want to add something?
Just a very quick point, which I think we have omitted to mention at the very beginning. We had agreed as a working method that we would not take decisions in a single meeting, right? So you don't have to be afraid to lose an opportunity to comment. What we planned for this meeting in order to be as constructive as can be is that we would take the atmosphere, the temperature of the room, and allow for people to respond and object to the findings of this meeting, right? So we're not going to make any firm decision during this meeting, but I think we need to make progress by just grasping the... Tomorrow is the second meeting. Wow.
No, in general, I think it's good practice to, if we feel like we have some form of agreement, to say, okay, we have this form of agreement, and probably the next call to make sure nothing came up after, like a second thought, and before we confirm this as an agreement of our group. So that would be my goal here. Kavus, you raised your hand.
Yes, I suggest that we have take it provisionally as it is, subject to some additions, if any, not closing the door totally. Thank you.
So what you would suggest is good starting ground, good starting point, and globally comfortable, but remaining flexible in case something comes up, right? I think this is sensible. We need to address if suddenly someone came up, some significant stakeholder group came up with a very relevant threat that we haven't identified, we would need to add it. So we will always need to be flexible about this list in this regard. Would that address your point, Kavus? Okay. Who was first? That was James.
Thank you, Matthew. Over here.
Oh, James.
So I just quickly reviewing the list, and this is something I raised on the previous call, was that I think that there are opportunities to merge or combine some of these scenarios. There's a significant amount of overlap. But I did want to put one potential suggestion on here, which is that in the future it may be possible for ICANN to delegate or subcontract some or all of its responsibilities under future IANA authority to a third party that's not identified today. And I think that we would like to at least understand whether that fits under this list of existing scenarios and contingencies, or if that is sufficient enough to warrant its own category of scenarios. And let me know if you need me to write that up and send that to the list, or put it in the chat box.
Yeah, I think it would be valuable to share it so we ensure we can have a quick check whether it's covered or not covered in the 21. Obviously, and that's very relevant. I have Rulof, Jordan, and then Hubert.
Thank you, Mathieu. Rulof Meijer. I'm quite comfortable with the list, although I think there are quite a few contingencies on it that we will decide that are not relevant to the work we're doing. I think the problem with such a list is that real contingencies come unexpected. We won't be able to think them up, so they're not on the list. And somehow we have to make sure that we also prepare for the unexpected. So I don't think we should be completely comfortable when we have dealt with all the contingencies and we've done the stress test and think, okay, now everything is okay, because the biggest problems always comes from areas where you never expected them to come from.
But preparing for at least the expected contingencies is already a first step.
Yeah, because then you know for sure they will never happen. That's the good thing about preparing for them.
It's just like plans. They're useless, but we need them. Jordan, you're next.
Thank you. Jordan Carter here. Just a suggestion to think about whether, if we're going to use these contingencies as the basis for our stress testing, whether it would be useful to kind of publish them as an early work output of this group and ask the broader ICANN community for feedback, whether they think there are gaps in these scenarios that we need to take into account, for a couple of reasons. One is to start getting the ball rolling with some outputs from us for the wider community to look at, and because it focuses people's thinking on the problems that might emerge, and to help minimize the unknown unknowns, it helps to get the widest number of perspectives available to us as soon as possible. So just an idea to think about.
Thank you, Jordan. Very valuable suggestion. And if there are any comments regarding this potential publication of the list, once it's agreed by the group, at least as a step, I think would be useful as we recap. Hubert?
Thank you. Hubert Schottner, German Ministry of Economic Affairs. As a general comment, I like to second other colleagues who saw that it's the opinion that it's difficult to present something of exhaustive list on potential threats, because I think this is an endeavor we will not achieve. We have unexpected events, and in this case we do not have solution and cannot find them. What I just wanted to raise, having read all these scenarios, my understanding of contingency is rather to understand a bit more or focus on issues that endanger ICANN as an institution. And I wonder whether it is possible to identify among these scenarios mentioned those that are endangering ICANN as an institution and insofar are of very high importance, and other scenarios that are also important but maybe cause or raise different questions on the table, but probably have to be considered in a different way. Thank you.
So in essence, you're pointing to sort of grading the how severe the threat would be to ICANN globally. Yes, exactly, how critical it is. That may be a fifth question we add at some point, and that might help us. However, I'm very cautious always that, we were four, and so...
Third question covers it. It says, particular concern to stakeholders, and the modification would be, is it of existential concern to ICANN?
And we need to be careful. I was echoing Rulof that... I mean, unexpected threats are come up quite often, or at least as often as expected ones, And small consequences sometimes turn into very big consequences, and it's very difficult to predict the actual impact of some of them. So that's some form of question we need to be aware of. Next is Avery.
Thank you. Just a quick question I was looking at when I was looking at the list, and something that I think is missing, although perhaps it's there in the capture by stakeholder groups, but I'm wondering what happens if the corporation just gets sick of all this multi-stakeholder nonsense?
What makes you think that hasn't happened already?
Okay, trying to keep it straight.
I mean, there's probably a nicer way to put it.
It might be addressed by the scenarios regarding what's number 10 about changing the bylaws and the systems.
Yeah, number 10, the chairman, CEO, or major officer acting in a manner inconsistent with the organization's mission, and if that mission includes multi-stakeholder in the words, it would cover it.
Yeah. And there's a couple of items regarding capture as well, which would actually be quite relevant to that. Bruce, did you want to comment?
I just wanted to put the counterpoint.
Any information do you want to provide on that?
Well, I think, one, it's part of the organisation structure to be multi-stakeholder, but coming back to the other side of that risk is, Avery made the comment, what happens if ICANN, the organisation, finds multi-stakeholderism too hard? The counter-argument to that is what happens if the multi-stakeholders find multi-stakeholder too hard? Because I think that's actually the bigger risk, because the real active participants isn't very large. It's actually pretty much this room out of a population of several billion on the planet. So it's still a relatively small part of the global public that's active in ICANN. And over time, that could decrease just as easily as increase. So that's another part of the contingency to think about is, what happens if we get lower and lower real active participation, and therefore there isn't really much real multi-stakeholderism for us to consider as a board?
There's potential.
There's potential. Yeah, that's the point I'm raising. Yeah.
I think we've had some good input, provided that Chris is raising. Chris.
Sorry, Matt, if that's okay. Yeah, I have
please, go ahead.
I have a question, and I apologize if this has already been covered and I'm just sort of coming to this late, but I find myself slightly confused, and maybe someone can help me. I understand that number 10, I think, has just been mentioned, right, which is people acting in a manner inconsistent with the organization's mission, and I can understand how that something like that happening would come under the work of this working group, because if that happened, there'd need to be some sort of accountability mechanism in place, to ensure that it could be undone or remedied. I'm slightly lost with some of these other contingencies as to what, if anything, accountability has to do with them, and I'm wondering, have we done the check on those yet, or are these just all sorts of contingencies? For example, I don't understand what litigation contingencies have got to do with accountability. Can someone explain to me why they're sitting in a list of contingencies for which we're trying to find accountability mechanisms?
So Thomas is suggesting to answer that. Please, Thomas.
Chris, the analysis of the contingencies is yet to come. This is just to set the scene and make sure that we've covered everything that the community came up with. Because I think we would be in a very bad position to make our recommendations and be told afterwards that a contingency was brought up and ignored by our group. So this is just to make sure that everything is surfaced. We will also list the contingencies and keep the numbering, even if we reduce the list, so that people can go back historically and find out what the contingencies were, that all of those were under consideration by this group. I hope this answers the question.
Steve, you wanted to react as well.
It's Steve Del Bianco. Chris, if I could just comment in by way of example, number 19 and 20, for instance, involve litigation. And you ask, what would it have to do with accountability? 19, for instance, if I can't attempt to delegate a GTLD because the registry operator is determined to be in breach of their contract, but then the registry operator challenges the action and gets an injunction from a national court, wherever they are. So I'm not a lawyer either, but to me, what that triggers is a consequence that we have to figure out ahead of time as we rewrite the IANA agreement and it disappears from the U.S. government. Who's the root zone maintainer? Because it ultimately becomes their job to change the delegation of that GTLD. And we need to be sure that the root zone maintainer and the root zone publishers are all immune from being sued or being stopped from following through on a policy-driven redelegation of a GTLD.
Can I respond to that?
Would you concede that at least that one can be creative in deciding that that does have a linkage to the IANA transition?
No, I completely agree with you because that one says I can attempt to do something. So a contingency that says I can attempt to do something clearly means that you've then got to have some sort of accountability. It's the ones where somebody else does something where, you know, I'm unclear as to where the accountability comes in. But you've just made a very important point. I'm not sure of the relevance of it to this particular working group, but let me be clear to you that I am unaware of any way you could insulate the root zone manager from litigation at all. There is nothing you can do to prevent someone suing. You can win if they sue you, but I'm not aware of any mechanism you can put in place that will prevent someone from being sued, especially in certain jurisdictions, including the US, which would be a main one. So separate points, Stephen, we can take that offline. But so certainly number 19, I would agree, fits into the bucket of accountability.
Thanks, Chris. So what I would like to do now is provided that we edit the list based on the inputs we've received from James, and there was a comment by Everett to adjust wording for number 21, which I think is absolutely relevant, and that we mentioned that this list is a snapshot at some point and that we may have to be flexible about this. Would there be any remaining objections to this list being taken as part of the further on our work as the agreed list of contingencies at this point? No, there wouldn't be. That's good news. And therefore, the action items I would take before we break for coffee would be, first of all, we'll put that list once again on our agenda next week on our weekly call to make sure no second thought happened on that list. Secondly, and of course between that, we'll have integrated the inputs from James and Everett and any minor editorial input that would be needed. Secondly, we, the co-chairs, will try and define some subgroups of threats and contingencies and proactively engage with small subgroups of colleagues that we would think would have the relevant skills to field the questions. And of course, it will be open, and it will just be a first proposal, and anyone interested can join, so on. But we would sort of initiate the triage of the contingencies towards small subgroups. We would also adjust the questions as discussed earlier based on our charter and the feedback we've received today, so that there is clarity about the work to be done by the small subgroups. And finally, we would probably prepare for a form of announcement of this list wider than our group and probably an announcement on the ICANN website or something to gather feedback, to make it known to the community and gather feedback formally and informally about this list following Jordan's advice earlier. Does this set of action items fit with everyone's understanding of what we've been discussing?
One question with respect to the last suggestion, the publication. I thought we were talking about having the chairs put out a statement similar to what you did 2 weeks ago with respect to our high-level intentions to help the CWG. A statement like that, including the 22 contingencies after they've been reworded, that would be quite helpful. However, I think it's premature to put it out for a formal ICANN public comment period. Thank you.
That was thanks for clarification. I was clearly referring to some form of high-level chair statement, whatever, but not a public comment. But that would, but certainly with a call for if anything comes up, please engage with the group early so we are more efficient in the end. And that would probably be a topic to discuss with the community in Singapore in one of the sessions we'll have, or at least part of the sessions we'll have, to get feedback in another form as well. Cavus, you wanted to say a few words.
Yes, just last clarification or question. Do we need to mention that the appearance of this list or the item in the list does not provide any order of priority or not? Because it may be seen that 2 has priority over 3, but perhaps at this stage there is no order of priority, just listing.
Thank you. Good point. Thank you, Cavus. And I think with that, we can close this item. And Grace has an announcement.
Hi, everyone. This is just to let you know that if you're in the remote participation room in the Adobe Connect room, you don't have to exit the room during the break. So we'll keep the room running. We'll just clear the notes for the, and the chat to incorporate into the wiki, but you can stay in the room and on the phone bridge.
And for colleagues here in the room, you can stay where you are, but you can also go in the back room where there's coffee and tea. You're all out. And we reconvene in 15 minutes?
20 minutes. Well, at 11.
At 11. 11 sharp.